And it hits me, oh my gosh, this is that triangle.
You know, there's explanation for everything that occurred in the Rendlesham Forest incident that doesn't involve aliens at all.
It was completely silent. It comes right over our heads.
He saw a classic flying saucer, really, standing in the clearing.
He turned over to my father and held his hand, and he looked in his eyes and he said, "We're not alone."
Welcome to Podcast UFO for our live show. We're live every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Dark Matter Radio Network. Please remember to visit the website podcastufo.com for past episodes, blogs, and forums. During the show, feel free to participate live in our chat room. And don't forget to like us on our very active Facebook page.
Hello and welcome to the show. I'm Martin Willis, your host, and Podcast UFO right here, and we're coming at you live on the Dark Matter Radio Network from a sweet little mountaintop in Maine. And as always, Wednesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, which is 1 a.m. UTC. We have a great show for you tonight with our guest, Roger Marsh. He is a UFO writer, author, playwright, independent filmmaker. And he's the editor of the monthly journal of the Mutual UFO Network. He's starting a partnering with Open Minds, as we had Alejandro Rojas on a little while ago, with writing MUFON news stories for Open Minds. And we're going to be talking a little bit about that. And before we get going any further, you know what? I want to apologize for last week. We had an astronomy clip that was a corrupt file that I checked it this week, and it is working. So we have Andy Flemings, and his question on this is, are we the aliens? Here's Andy.
And hello, Martin and listeners. Now, a couple of years ago at a local planetarium, I had the privilege of holding some pieces of Mars that had actually been found on the ice of Antarctica. Scientists know the origin of these NASA samples because the gases inside share the same composition of the gases in the Martian atmosphere. The meteorites were ejected from an impactor strike on the Red Planet. Now, this leads to some interesting speculation about whether life actually originated here on the Earth. Let's face it, while we search for extraterrestrial life, we still don't know for certain its terrestrial origins. What if instead of originating in pond scum, life hitched a ride here on a meteor? Now, this is the theory of panspermia, which in Greek means seeds everywhere. The seeds in this case would not only be the chemical building blocks of life, but also extremophile bacteria. Panspermia says that these seeds were universally dispersed via meteors, and proponents highlight the fact that with little atmosphere, the early Earth endured innumerable meteor strikes. These would have reached the surface relatively intact. The theory became popular in the 18th century. Lord Kelvin, for example, thought that life came to the Earth on stones from another world. In 1973, DNA Nobel Prize winner Francis Crick published the idea of directed panspermia, and this proposed that an advanced life form actually sent life to the Earth to fulfill a purpose. The panspermia theory is still supported today by scientists such as Stephen Hawking. Indeed, this theory of early life is one of the reasons he urges for more space exploration. It is also a point of interest for many organisations trying to contact intelligent life on other planets. Now, here's a thought. Perhaps alien life is already here. Perhaps it's us.
Yeah. Thanks, Andy. Yeah, you never know. It could be. You know, when I was in high school, I may have mentioned this in one of the older podcasts. I actually wrote a paper for an English class that I was in, you know, coming up with the idea that all races in the world were actually seeded here from different planets and were an experiment. And I actually did, you know, I think I got an A on that, which was really rare for me in high school. So, but it was just a thought. And you know, since time has gone on, I've actually heard that come up. A few other people have thought that crazy idea. I'm not crazy alone is what I'm trying to say here. You know, I usually do a news piece here and there. And I decided to pull in our guest because he is one of the news guys out there and actually one of the best ones. And Roger Marsh, are you on the line?
I'm here, Martin. Yes. Glad to be here.
Yes. Thanks so much for joining us. And, hey, Roger, why don't you just go ahead and throw out a news story. I know you're very involved in that and always writing. And I like your stories and have been following them all along. So why don't you just throw out a topic, too, and we'll talk about them.
Oh, sure. I'm usually doing a few stories per day, Monday through Friday. I'm always scanning the incoming database of all the incoming reports. I just covered a case, a real interesting case out of Texas. Two Texas witnesses described close encounter with hovering UFOs. These are the cases, Martin, that we really like to get because it's a very similar object, very close to the ground, but the two witnesses don't know each other. The cases were actually about 6 days apart. The first was a Texas witness at Lindale who reported a triangle-shaped UFO hovering over a bridge off I-20, and that was about 10:50 p.m. on June 10. That particular witness happened to be driving home and noticed that this object was hovering. Then we get a second report that 6 days earlier on June 4, this is case 56970, same town where a witness is reporting an object hovering at the treetop level. The only overlap I could tell you right now, I know both witnesses were saying it was triangle. They were both using the color yellow. So that one's under investigation right now. Hmm. And the other case I was going to bring up, and this has been happening a lot lately since our TV show, you know, Hangar One, the UFO Files came out, and our new website. Just over the last 6 months, we've been having an incredible number of former military and former police officers coming forward saying, you know, basically, hey, before I go to the grave, I got to tell my story. And in some cases, you know, they've been asked to sign, you know, affidavits saying that they would never talk. But this particular story I just covered, it's a former Coast Guard sailor who revealed an encounter with a humanoid creature. And the case was, he believes, either in 78 or 79. Again, he was a sailor with the Coast Guard on a cutter. And this was somewhere between Florida and Cuba, you know, in those waters. And he was standing near the fantail with another sailor when he first saw that object. And his actual quote was, "I witnessed a transparent, oval-shaped craft that cut across the back of the ship, maybe 100 to 200 yards away." And he got a very good look at the craft. We have him quoted as saying, "I can clearly see a frame inside the craft and the humanoid pilot as he abruptly turned to look at us." And again, a lot of these encounters, Martin, are, you know, just, it might be a minute or two of the encounter, but a lot of people from the military were finding out. Of course, they report this to their superiors, and they're immediately pulled into a room. They're, you know, they're debriefed, and they're basically told it didn't happen. It's a non-event.
Right.
So we're seeing a lot of that lately.
Yes, yes. Getting back to the first one, you know,
sure.
when you hear about the triangles, and it seems like that's the only thing you hear about today. You never hardly hear about the disc like you used to, but the triangle over and over again, you know, I imagine that there are some of them that are possibly drones. Now, I know that this particular one, when they mentioned that there's no sound at all and the thing's hovering with no sound, it kind of,
right,
in my mind anyway, makes me think that it's probably not a drone. Not saying we know what it is, but still. I went through some of your reports that came in through MUFON that you've been writing about in the last few days, and it seems like 90% of them are triangles. What do you think about that?
Well, you're very right. I think that, because I do specialize in the cases under 500 feet. I get very, very up close with the reports and follow them if anything gets under 500 feet. Most of those reports, I will agree, they were probably mostly triangles, but we do continue. I think the sphere is actually the most often reported shape within MUFON. Triangles up there, the disks continue to be seen, and like what you just said, that a lot of people studying UFOs today, we have to be very careful. Are these people actually looking at a drone? And we, of course, try to keep up with the drone technology or what they're telling us. But we're not really seeing anything out there that has no sound to it. And especially the way some of these objects move, like very typical, somebody may be looking at a light that's very far out. It seems to be 2 to 3 miles out. They're observing it, and then all of a sudden, boom, that object just comes right into their airspace, like a bat out of hell, moving into the airspace, and then comes to, you know, a stop on a dime, and it's hovering. It's not making any noise, and then it might make some maneuvers. You know, usually people say it looks like the object is observing something on the ground, that it's in search of something. But it definitely looks like there's an intelligence behind it. And then it either meanders away, depending on the lay of the land where you're at, where you just, it just kind of is obscured, you know, by the landscape. Many other people say it moves like a bat out of hell away. It's leaving, too.
Oh, I forgot to mention to our live listeners on the Dark Matter Radio Network, if you want to jump over to Podcast UFO, you can get into our chat room. It's real easy to get into. And we have a question that just popped up in there for you, Roger. And do you have any ideas as to what some of the military-based lighter-than-aircraft might be used for? Are you familiar with the lighter-than-aircraft the military has?
Yes, somewhat. I know the larger team at MUFON, you know, they're very on top of it. I have read some of the articles that they are in development with these aircraft. But, again, keep in mind that this is not what our witnesses are seeing. There may be cases where people are looking at something like a lighter than aircraft at a distance, the same way that you would see a balloon, you know, at a distance.
Mm-hmm.
But when the aircraft is coming down under 500 feet, and it's in some cases just 100 or 200 feet from you, that's not what they're looking at.
Right.
It's definitely a different technology. So,
Roger, let's find out a little bit about you. And, you know, we'll talk more about this subject, of course, but I want to find out about you, how you got into the field, and are you basically a journalist or close to one?
Yeah, that's, I mean, my degrees. I have a bachelor's and a master's degree in journalism. I basically worked in the communications field my whole life. I was a journalist, you know, newspaper, magazine work. Later, spent a whole decade in book publishing, professional book publishing. For some pretty big companies, you know, developing books into worldwide audiences. And at some point in my life, I just decided to get out and do some other projects, became a filmmaker. I'm a writer of films and documentaries. Love to get out. In fact, I'm going on an adventure Friday night, doing a quick shoot at a haunted farmhouse. It's going to be very, very interesting. Haunted 200-acre dairy farm. But eventually, I came up with this experiment as a journalist, because as I looked around the country, and especially through the web, because in professional journalism, you know, everybody from the Wall Street Journal to the LA Times, I wasn't seeing a single journalist in this country who could say that they're a full-time UFO writer. Now, you do have that, let's say, at the Huffington Post. You know, there are a couple of exceptions or people that maybe are part-time. But this goes back to January of 2009, and I got in touch with the MUFON executive director at that time, James Carrion, And I had an experiment, and I said, you know, I'm going to write about UFOs full time as a journalist, as a seasoned journalist, and I've worked at very high levels across the country and very serious about it. I've had my own sighting, and I said, yes, go for it. And at that time, I hooked up with Examiner.com. They were just about 6 months off the ground. You know, I found an outlet that would pay me to do the work. And the way Examiner is hooked up, they kind of match you with a market. So at that time, I lived in Chicago, so I became the Chicago UFO Examiner. Within 2 weeks, I was probably the most popular or one of the most popular writers in their entire system. So, of course, I get a phone call from headquarters saying, hey, we'd like to bump you up and make you the national UFO Examiner. Great. And it just took off from there. I mean, it was like almost 2 billion, you know, page hits in my first year.
Oh.
And it just, yeah, it just kept skyrocketing. And, but the closer I got with MUFON and then the more that they learned to, you know, understand me and that, you know, the seriousness of the way that I worked, I eventually then joined MUFON after a few years of working with them. Became editor of their monthly journal, as you mentioned earlier, and about 6 months ago, I became director of communications for them.
Right. So I believe we communicated. I congratulated you back then, I think.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
So it's been a very serious ride for me as a journalist. Right now, I'm just kind of within MUFON. You know, day to day, I handle all of their media rights and acquisitions for television, film, documentary work. That keeps me extremely busy. There isn't a day go by that we don't get a call from a production company in Hollywood or, you know, the Europeans or the Japanese, some, you know, show that's being developed. A month before last, the show aired, but we had developed an entire hour with CNN, the Morgan Spurlock TV show that airs Sunday nights. We did an hour with them. Very interesting. So it's like a longer series, different topics. We were just the topic of that show, you know. We're actually developing a similar show with a British company right now, for example. They're coming in, I think, July to two different locations, you know, again, just for that episode.
Yeah.
And we pretty much work with every show that's got UFOs in it, you know, to some extent, from providing background graphics, case files, talking heads, you know, something for them all. So that's kind of part of what I do, is mainly the television stuff, somewhat into film. And then, of course, we have the web content now coming in, that happening. And if I have nothing else to do, then I'm working on the journal.
Now, you're working with Open Minds now.
I'll say this publicly for the first time. I am still associated with Examiner.com, but they're an extremely frustrating outlet to work with. As sophisticated as their back-end system is for writers, it's a great way to work. Anyone that wants to read one of my stories, currently you have to watch a 30-second video. And usually it's the pop-ups happening, 2-3 pop-ups while you're reading a story. So I finally said, you know, enough, and I looked around the globe, and Open Minds, I thought, was doing a really, really great job.
I agree.
At covering UFOs, both domestically and internationally. And when we had already had somewhat of an overlap with them already, and, you know, advertising trade-offs, things like that. So I'm part of the team now.
That's wonderful. Yeah, Alejandro, I consider him a friend. He's a good guy. And,
he's great, yeah.
He and I seem to think a little bit, you know, more or less on the same level about this whole thing. And I really appreciate his hard work. Let's see, one of the things that came up on the message board, and I'm curious, too, let's hear about your sighting you had.
Oh, sure. And just so you know, I mean, I came from a family of, you know, mom and dad, 8 kids, southwestern Pennsylvania. My parents, early on, I think it was, I'm going to say it was 1953, my mom got up in the middle of the night to use the bathroom, getting back on bed. She looks at the window, sees this light. and there is a disc-shaped object hovering over the gas station across the street. Mm. She wakes my father up. My father, you know, a businessman, somebody who later in life became extremely successful in his field, kept very quiet about it. But as a kid growing up, I love to tell people my father bought every UFO book and magazine on the market. We had everything. And so I just remember even as a, you know, being in the maybe fifth or sixth grade, just sitting on the floor next to Dad's nightstand, you know, the latest copy of Fate magazine, any UFO story I could get my hand on. And then, I don't know how well your audience is familiar with this, but every once in a while in the country, we have a flap of UFOs.
Mm-hmm.
A period of time when there's a very, very high concentration. Now, I grew up in southwestern Pennsylvania in Westmoreland County, just south of Pittsburgh, and in 73, 74, we had one of those flaps. And Stan Gordon, who even today is still, you know, studying and investigating UFOs in Pennsylvania, he was the guy back then, and so mm-hmm. state, local police agencies were feeding everything through Stan. The unusual thing about that particular flap was that it was a combination UFO and Bigfoot flap, the two of them together. But I'm 16 years old. It's October of 1973, and I'm standing outside just after dark in my suburban neighborhood with about 10 or 12 other kids. Looking down the street, you can see a lot of moms and dads out with their rakes and, you know, getting ready to go in. But it is dark out. And somebody pointed down the street and said, "What's that?" And all eyes went that direction, and maybe the equivalent of about three blocks away, we see this disc-shaped object right over the telephone poles. A telephone pole in Pennsylvania is 40 feet, so this object had to be just 41 or 42 feet off the ground, the width of that two-lane road, completely silent, just meandering along at about, you know, maybe 5-10 miles per hour. We had enough time to look at it, see it coming, and it was just a jaw-dropping thing. It just, I tell people, if I had had a camera in my hand, I think I would have just dropped it. It just, all of a sudden, you only have a few seconds to prepare, and as it moved over me, it's like all you heard was the displacement of air, like a shh sound, like a swishing sound. And you could almost feel the weight of this thing. You know, the width of a two-lane road, maybe, you know, 8 or 10 feet tall. The entire bottom was lit up the same color of the moon. And as it moved away from us, it was staying at that height and just following the lay of the land, the rolling hills in Pennsylvania. And it went down and just crossed over Route 30 just below us. The object did come back two more times that night. I lived in a neighborhood of maybe, you know, 250 homes at that time, and a lot of people were outside. A lot of people had seen it, and we all went to one neighbor's front lawn, and we stood there, and the audience, or the UFO came back again, but at a little further distance from us. It kind of shot in and then just hovered maybe, you know, 500 feet, 800 feet in the air. And after a few seconds, it just shot straight down to the ground, never actually landed, so maybe 100 feet off the ground. And then it kind of slid over to the right and then shot back up to where it was hovering at before. Okay, and then at some point, it's just sitting there, and then all of a sudden, boom, off like a bat out of hell. You couldn't see it after a split second. And then within seconds, two military jets came into that same airspace, circled around, and eventually went off in the same direction the UFO went. A couple of seconds later, two light airplanes, also in formation, came in, did the same circle, flew off.
Wow.
And then the whole thing repeated itself about 15 minutes later.
Wow, that's a good one. Was there anything in the papers about it?
I'm positive there was not. Yeah. I know that my father was a volunteer with Stan Gordon at the time, and he did call the case in. So it is logged in. Now, all these years later, Stan and I went on to co-author the book Silent Invasion. If anyone's interested in what happened in PA in 73-74, The book is by Stan Gordon. It's called Silent Invasion, the Pennsylvania UFO Bigfoot Casebook. Definitely a book to read with a lot of lights on and have company. Don't be alone. It's a great book, but my actual case is in that book.
Oh, that's great. Great. Well, you know how you mentioned when it went over you and you felt you could almost feel like pressure?
Yes.
We have a listener in Australia that mentioned that her aunt or mother or someone was out gardening and one went over them and the pressure just like pushed them to the ground and they could feel it when it went over. And, you know, I mean, just hearing you say that makes me wonder if, you know how they never make any sound, if there's some type of anti-gravity propulsion that they're using that makes one feel pressure underneath them. I mean, it's just a curious thing you hear about every once in a while.
Yeah, we're kind of logging in a lot of what people say they're feeling and what's going on. We already know that in a lot of these cases that our electronics are completely useless.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like a force field that goes out, and everything just goes down. Batteries, you know, drain. Or it's this feeling of lost time also. So we do know that they can affect people to the point of, you know, gee, I thought I was outside for 10 minutes. I come in and find out I was out there for 2 hours. So they kind of, you hear that over and over again, you know, kind of a daze, not always leading to a feeling of abduction. That does happen sometimes. But, yeah, I think there's a lot, you know, we're recording a lot of what people are saying when they get around one of these things.
Now, you're so involved in this and so actively writing about all these cases. Why don't you just... If you can, this year, you know, a lot of people say to me, well, there's nothing new going on, or, you know, you guys are rehashing old cases over and over again, and I understand that, and I actually believe that some of the old cases deserve to be rehashed over and over again because new things come out, but let's just say this year in particular, 2014, what would you say are some of the highlights of some of the things you've reported on?
Oh, boy. I'll have to say, I don't know if I'm going to give you the answer you want to hear, but I think that each year that ticks away, that we have more people coming forward. So we're getting a higher number of brand new reports, like, hey, it happened last night, it happened last week. But the other thing that's happening, again, more each year, we are now getting where we didn't get this, you know, 5-10 years ago. We're getting former retired military coming forward.
Hmm.
We're getting retired former police officers coming forward. Two very, very important groups. In fact, we had a call today at headquarters. I don't know all the details, but Jan Harzon, our executive director, did call me to alert us, or alert myself, that a guy called and was explaining this UFO incident he had back in the, gosh, I'm not even sure how, was the 40s or the 50s, because he is up there in years. And he said that he was pulled into a room and told, this did not happen, you will never talk about it, and they put paperwork in front of this man, and he signed it. And now he's up there in years, and he's calling us for advice.
Wow.
And saying, I want to tell the whole story. I want to do it, but I'm afraid, you know, at my age, is somebody going to come and arrest me and put me in prison for the rest of my life? But we've been hearing these people over and over and again. I mean, we've had to send field investigators out at undisclosed locations to meet up with these people. They're afraid. One guy wanted to meet, you know, openly in a restaurant somewhere.
Wow.
And, you know, we went down, we recorded the whole conversation, you know, with his permission. They're just popping up all over the country. In fact, I'm editor of the journal, the July journal, which is just crossing my desk right now. It's just leaving. It's out for review right now, but it's going to the on Monday morning. This story just came to me a couple of days ago out of Texas, and I decided to clear, you know, the front page. But we had a police officer in Texas who was on duty 14 years ago when he saw an entity up on the roof of his town's post office. Huh. And it's a very compelling story. And he went on as a police officer for an additional 10 years, retired. He's been retired for 4 years. Now, he was never asked to sign off because he never put the entire incident into the report. He basically just said there was a person up on the roof. But there were backup officers called. The fire department was called. They used a ladder truck, you know, to get him up on the roof. So, again, very compelling story, but, you know, this is happening to us now once or twice a week.
Gee, wow.
So, to me, that's the 2014 story.
And I'll take that. That's really interesting. One of the things I'd never, ever talk about in this show, but I'm going to ask you about it, is Men in Black. Does that topic ever come up anymore, like when you're doing any type of reports?
Funny you should ask, because we've actually just been discussing that lately. Most of your classic Men in Black stories are from previous decades, you know, the 50s, 60s, 70s, you know, in there.
Mm-hmm.
Up until a couple of weeks ago, if I was on your show, I would have told you about a case that happened a couple of Florida, and I have since found that upon closing that case out, that we actually now think the case was a hoax. That was my best Men in Black story. Because
okay.
It was a Florida State police officer, and it had all the elements of a great Hollywood production. You know, Steven Spielberg was knocking on our door trying to get that case. But I believe I have talked to the state director now, and he kind of believes that that's over in hoax land right now.
Mm-hmm.
We're not really, honestly, I'm thinking back over the last 5 or 6 years, and I'm really not hearing about people claiming that people are knocking on their door, you know, and telling them you can't speak about this, you know, you can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
I know that that Stan Gordon had a case, or a couple of cases in that 73-74 era, where somebody had to have been bugging his phone back then, because a witness, for example, calls him to say, hey, you know, we just saw the Bigfoot creature on our property, get out here, the footprints are fresh. So it takes him about an hour to get himself together and get to the location, only to find out that somebody else showed up ahead of time and interrogated everybody at the scene, and then began destroying evidence. I mean, literally went out to these footprints and just stamped them out.
Huh.
It really upset the people at the scene. The guy gets in his vehicle and left. We have no idea to this date, you know, who that was. But that, again, that was back in 1973. I'm just not hearing about the Men in Black today.
Right, right. Now, have any of the stories that you have written about gone, let's just say, viral or gone into mainstream?
Oh, well, some of them, I would say, are moving into television. The problem with television, as I've seen it in the last 5 years, is everybody wants to go after the same cases.
Mm-hmm.
They all want Area 51. They all want the crash, you know, in 1947 at Roswell. You know, they all want the same thing, and they just keep retelling the stories. And I've been screaming as loud as I can, you know, we have great stories, you know, very, very compelling stories. We don't have the bumper off the UFO. I'm sorry, we don't have a lot of evidence. We have some evidence, some trace evidence, but we, you know, what makes a story compelling? You know, maybe a lot of witnesses, you know, to something, but when a craft comes down under 500 feet, I mean, think about it. The further back in time you go, even 5, 10 years ago, but then beyond, Martin, people were just not coming forward. Mm-hmm. I mean, they kept these stories to just their family and friends. I mean,
right.
I assure you that in 1973, I did not go back to high school on Monday morning and tell that story. I mean, you know, maybe I told a girlfriend or, you know, my best friend, you know, mm-hmm. about what happened, but I was not out broadcasting it for fear of ridicule. So, yeah, mm-hmm. some of what I've written about in the last 4 or 5 years, they are MUFON case files, and we take them as far as we can. You know, of course, we look for, you know, Mother Nature. We look for our own known aircraft. And once we rule that out, we call the case an unknown. And we close it out, although no closed case is ever permanently closed. We're always open to, you know, if additional witnesses want to come forward or there's additional evidence. But we have a lot of closed cases that are crazy. I mean, and the weird thing is that it's, you know, when you say, could it be a drone? Could it be one of ours? If you take all the best cases, if you just took and spent the next couple of years only studying the cases under 500 feet, and if you only study the triangle craft, it's almost like no two craft are exactly alike. Like, there's not this, you know, Henry Ford Model T factory on Planet X that's just knocking these out one after another. Oh, you have an old UFO. It's got fins on it, you know. No, it's the sleek one, you know. You know, hood emblems are out now, and now we're doing this, you know. No more suede interior. Now it's soft, supple leather, you know. It just doesn't seem like that. It seems like the shape and size are, you know, it's almost like the factory is giving no two models are exactly alike. Everybody gets, you know, a model unique to them. Mm. Although you will, with the triangle ship, for example, you will commonly see one red light at each of the three points and a white light underneath. And you'll get 10 in a row just like that. Although one person says it was 20 feet across, another says it was 50 feet across, next witness says it's a mile across. Then you have a witness that comes along that says, no, it was three white lights at the tip and a single red light underneath.
Hmm.
You know, customization.
Yeah. Wow.
And we don't understand it, you know.
Yeah, yeah. There's someone, we're going to just take a real quick jag away from UFOs just for a moment, that someone wants to hear about your haunted cows. Can you just do a real brief thing and we get back on the topic of UFOs?
Oh, sure. I also write about the paranormal in general, mm-hmm. and I never go after famous cases. I'm always looking for unique one-off cases that have never been told. And I came across a family in they're in southwestern Pennsylvania, and they have a 200-acre dairy farm. And it's just a husband-wife. They're in their, I think the husband's about 70 years old, the wife's late 40s, early 50s. The husband's parents bought the farm in 1946. The other kids went off to do other careers. This is the kid that stayed at home. And they've had a number of instances where they saw, you know, a ghost, something materialized in the home. Probably the most interesting, and it always seems to be related to someone who once lived in the house or the area, because the wife opened the door in the kitchen that looks up the staircase to the second floor, and she saw a little boy standing at the top of the stairs, about 3 or 4 years old, and he had a long, like, nightgown on, like a one-piece thing, and kind of short hair in front, kind of longer in the back. And in his right hand, he had his middle finger in his mouth, like he was sucking on the finger. And he's just looking down, you know, down the staircase very sadly at this woman. Well, she just freaked out when she saw this, and she ran out of the staircase, ran outside, met up with her husband, and she's describing this little boy. And he took her calmly into the house and went through some old photos, and he pulled a photo out of a cousin of his and held it up and said, "Is this the kid?" And she said, "Yeah, that's him. That's the kid I saw." And he said, "Well, he died from pneumonia at the age of 3. And he said, "The one thing I remembered about that kid, he was always sucking on that middle finger on his right hand," which she knew nothing about.
Wow. Oh, that's a good one.
I can tell you more. There's like two other things going on in the house. I don't know what your time's like.
Well, no, that's great. Now, we can kind of tie this in or segue this, and that is a lot of times you hear about, you know, UFO reports in an area, and then you'll hear about, you know, Bigfoot and ghosts all in the same area. Now, do
right.
you have any instances you can think of that, since you do so much writing on this?
Well, I'll cite simply the 73-74 era. Again, the book Silent Invasion by Stan Gordon. Here's the typical thing that happened. You'd have two neighbors who live very close to each other, but they don't know each other. Again, rolling hills of Pennsylvania. One lives on one side of the hill, one lives on the other side of the hill. But their homes are accessed from different roads on each side of the hill, even though they probably live, you know, just a few hundred yards from each other. They don't know each other. One witness calls in to Stan and says, "Hey, we looked out, you know, our back window at 9 o'clock last night, and there were 3 Bigfoot creatures standing in our backyard." Great. He takes the case report. I'll be out to investigate. An hour later, the family on the other side of the hill calls and says, "Hey, at 9 o'clock last night, there was a, you know, oval-shaped, disc-shaped object hovering 50 feet off the ground in our backyard last night." Okay. You kind of have to put two and two together. And it's not just isolated cases. It's hundreds of cases from that era. And then there's, if you ever want to hear about the great Uniontown case of 73, oh, my God, the UFO landed. There were Bigfoot creatures on the ground. State police officer was a witness. Excellent story.
Wow, that sounds like a good one. And we can go over that a little bit if you'd like, if you want to just elaborate a little more on that.
Oh, on the Uniontown case, yes. This also happened in that 1973 era. State police got a call that an object landed on their farm near Uniontown, Pennsylvania, Fayette County, same county where the farm is, coincidentally. Anyway, what happened was the farmer and his wife and son and a couple of neighbor kids were standing on the front porch after dark one night, and they saw this large, maybe, I'm doing this on memory, maybe 40, 50 feet across, you know, round object, you know, in a slow trajectory coming down toward, you know, their property. And the son, and I think he was about maybe 18 years old at the time, he jumps in the family pickup truck with these two younger boys from the area. And as they approached the spot where they thought the object landed, they were actually driving up a hill. They couldn't see down over the knoll of the hill. So they got close to the peak of the hill, and they stopped the pickup truck. They get out. The three of them run up to the top of the hill, and they look down. And they see this object 40, 50 feet across, just glowing white, sitting on the ground. So the teenage boy goes back to the pickup truck where he's got a shotgun, comes back to the top of the hill, you know, aims and fires right at the object. As he pulls the trigger, the UFO, just in the blink of an eye, disappears right in front of them. I know at that point one of the little boys ran off, you know, just without the pickup truck, ran off screaming, as I remember the story. The other one stayed there. At that point, the remaining boy and the teenager got back in the pickup truck. They went back to mom and dad's house. They called the state police. So at this point, the state police, not quite, you know, probably believing what's going on, they send one officer, one cruiser out to the property, they go to, he starts at the house, they pick up the teenage boy, the two of them drive up to that same spot where they parked the pickup truck. They get to the knoll of that hill, and they look down. And what they're seeing, they're not seeing a craft on the ground, but the state police officer would later go on record, and I quote him as saying, from the light that was left behind on the ground, he said you could read a newspaper by that light. So he's on the ground now at the site, like looking at the ground. It's lit. He could read a newspaper off of it. And he and the teenager look up because there's a line of trees, you know, fairly close to them. There are two Bigfoot creatures coming toward them. Freaked the police officer out. They said that he ran so fast to his cruiser. And back in those, you know, this is 1973, they didn't have electric lock buttons on your keychain, you know. And they said that he couldn't get the key in the door. So they took the kid then back to the barracks where, of course, everybody, they thought it was a humorous event. And they were picking on, you know, both the witness and, and of course, the officer. The little-known part of that story is that police officer never went back to work. He resigned and moved out of state.
Wow.
And Stan Gordon and his right-hand man, who's now deceased, in fact, I have him on a 45-minute video that's available on YouTube, where he details this case, because the two of them went out there that night, later that night. So quite interesting second part to the story.
Wow, that is something. Now, I wanted to ask you, since you're involved and you're with MUFON, and you're seeing so many sightings come in day after day, and a lot of them are at least, as they say, a percentage of them cannot be explained, why on earth would you think that would be visited by whatever we're being visited by so often? Just, you know, in your own thoughts, what do you think?
Yeah, if you're asking me personally, they've always been here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the theory that they're coming, that they're off planet, I kind of look at it like it's another species. And I also tend to look at it because if you just stopped and spent the next year just studying the Bigfoot creature and then go and spend another year or two studying the UFOs, it's almost like they're interdimensional somehow, that we're not tracking them. They're coming into our airspace. Or are you familiar with the book Hunt for the Skinwalker?
Oh, yes, I read it. And hopefully George is going to be on. He can't be on our show live because he's busy during this hour, but he's going to be recording at some point, George Knapp.
He's our keynote speaker this summer.
Uh-huh.
I'm one of the speakers in July in New Jersey this year. But, yeah, in that book, I just quickly tell you, you might remember the scene, that it's two scientists out after dark, and they're coming up on it's either a lake or a pond, and they see this, like, ball of light, and it's coming along, like, the banks of the water, and all of a sudden that ball of light begins to expand, and it expands out to what, you know, maybe 4 or 5 feet, if I remember correctly. And then all of a sudden, a Bigfoot creature steps out of it.
Right. Crawls out of it.
The Bigfoot creature goes up along the bank, and the light just folds into itself, implodes, and boom, to a dime, to it disappears.
Yeah.
So those are the kind of details. There was another Bigfoot story in 73 that took place in Ohio, Powell, Pennsylvania, where this mountain woman, I'll call her, she lived alone, you know, with just her and her animals, thought that something was coming after her chickens after dark, stepped outside on the little front porch that she had with her shotgun, and she came face to face, probably 12 to 15 feet from a Bigfoot creature. She cocked that gun down, and she pointed it, she fired it, again, like the Uniontown incident. As she pulled the trigger, the Bigfoot creature simply dissolved, like in a blink of an eye, throw the light switch. Stan investigated that case. He found the bullet holes, or, you know, the bullets in the tree. I mean, people just can't keep making this stuff up because the facts overlap one to the other. And there are similarities between different types of paranormal events. We're just not understanding them, but if you're asking me for my personal opinion, it's not necessarily MUFON's opinion, but I think all of this, it's always been here. In fact, this could be a TV series. You could drop me off blindfolded anywhere in the country. I don't care where you drop me off. Give me 24 hours, and I'll find, a UFO encounter. I'll find, ghost stories, all kinds of paranormal events. People just aren't out talking about them. It's not water cooler, gossip yet.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. We have a question up on the chat room, and I can chime in just a little bit on it. One of the people want to know, has anyone ever talked about a square UFO? And I will say to that listener is, yes, I did speak to someone that had a square UFO encounter. It looked like a box, according to him, with lights around it. And it actually moved up in the sky, and it burst into about five lights that made a formation. Very, very strange. But do you ever hear of any square or box type?
Yeah, the box, not as common, but the rectangle, very common.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of our lower reported, but I remember there was a famous case out of, I want to say, North Carolina. It's been 3-4 years since I covered this case, but it was a elderly couple had just finished dinner. They're at the back of the house in the kitchen doing dishes together, and the wife looks out in the backyard and says to the husband, "What's that green light?" So the husband, meanders out into the backyard, and it's actually in the neighbor's yard. So he walks up to the hedge and looks over the hedge, and he sees this object, again, on memory. I apologize if I'm off a little bit. Something about 40 feet long and maybe 10, 12 feet wide, a rectangle hovering right there in the neighbor's yard. No sound. And all of a sudden, the front end just sort of tilts up a little bit, and then, boom, it's the bat out of hell. Scene.
Right.
I had an internet radio show for about 6 months a few years ago, had him as a guest on the show, and I had to, live on the show, I had to say to him, when you went back inside, what did you say to your wife? These incidents happen in the blink of an eye. You could have two people in the street with their back to each other, and one of them is totally not just having a normal day, and the other guy is looking at a UFO hovering, 15 feet off the ground. And then, mm-hmm. boom, it's gone. He right. turns to his friend, did you see that? The friend's like, no.
One of the things that people always bring up when it comes to UFOs and sightings, this is mostly people outside of the field that say, well,
sure.
How come, everybody has a cell phone, how come there aren't more pictures? And then the next thing you hear about is, how come the pictures are always blurry? And then if the pictures are too good, then, it's photoshopped or, why don't you address any one of those topics? Because, that always comes up.
Yeah, I still believe, the further into the future we go, the more sophisticated our electronics will be. But there's a number of different reasons. It starts with my reason from 1973. I mean, even at age 16, I come from a photography family. I was a photographer back then, pretty damn good one. But I swear to you, if I had had a camera on me, I would have dropped it. Mm-hmm. I mean, because we all live in this, what we call our real world, yep. our real surroundings, okay? And if something out of the ordinary like that happens, it frightens you. Like, what is this? What if you were just out walking at night by yourself and suddenly a Bigfoot creature steps out in front of you? I guarantee you're not going to say, hey, could you hold that pose there for a little bit?
Hold the pose.
Do your hair. Take time, do your hair. Okay. No. And even at my age, at the age of 57, time me. Say, Roger, quick. There's a UFO. Okay, which pocket is my cell phone in? I have a pretty good cell phone camera. Okay, how many seconds is it going to take me? Okay, I know I put that button on the front screen. Push that button. Oh, now it's still or video. Which one should I do? Push that one a couple more seconds. It's gone in most cases. And
right.
then even if I said a UFO, okay, flies right into the middle of a Steven Spielberg movie set where there's, you know, multi-million-dollar cameras, directors with, like, 52 years of experience, okay, lenses 6 feet long, okay, these objects can cause all of the electronics to jam and not work. So, again, I'm not completely saying that, you know, we don't have anything good. Why is it always blurry? It is very frustrating, but I do hear that over and over again every day. I tried to get an image of it in my camera that's never not worked before. I swear to you, I had just charged it that morning. I couldn't get it to do a damn thing. And then the second this thing left my airspace, boom, it's all working again.
Right. Yeah, you hear that a lot, and I mentioned this, and I don't want to be redundant, but, you know, I mentioned this that a Russian gentleman I spoke to was going through a mountain pass in Russia years ago, and he said that every single car engine stopped, and this cigar-shaped thing floated over them, and then, you know, after it went through the pass, every car started, you know, everyone could start their engine back up. It does seem to affect things like that. We only have a few minutes, or actually we have less than a minute left. So why don't you, if you would, do you have a website or you have a way to be contacted you want to give out?
Well, on the personal side, as a writer, if anyone wants to look at my works that are available, I'm at rogermarsh.com. That's R-O-G-E-R-M-A-R-S-H. rogermarsh.moonfruit.com.
Moonfruit?
Moonfruit.com. It's a free place to put a website up. It's very easy to do, even though I am a web builder outside. There's free things over there. I wrote a paranormal short story. I have done three paranormal documentaries, which were available free at YouTube, but you can see the descriptions. You can click and easily go right over. I did write and direct a full-length comedy. You can see that over there. I did write and direct a paranormal docudrama that's over there. And then I do write for Huffington Post. You could click to go there.
That's
right.
I
have not probably put Open Minds in yet.
Hey, Roger, thanks so much. We ran out of time. Thank you so much.
Okay, thanks for having me. Bye-bye.
You bet. So that's it for our show today. If you missed any part of it, you can catch the podcast over at podcastufo.com. I want to thank everyone for helping out with the show today. Keith Rowland and Andy Fleming for his clip. You can check us out live here next week right here at the Dark Matter Radio Network and every Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And thank you for listening today, and we'll see you next week.